This Taylor. Fly ball to left.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Nothing hurts than watching your team get eliminated from postseason play.
Chris Taylor, a walk-off home run. The Dodgers are walking off to San Francisco.
The Rich Eisen Show.
Playoff baseball will find your weaknesses.
Heck of a baseball game. Everybody got a chance to watch. One swing of the bat, dictate of the night.
Earlier on the show, Ravens defensive end Calais Campbell, former MLB executive David Sampson. Still to come, former Raiders CEO Amy Trask. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number three of the Rich Eisen Show on the air. Oh boy, tonight do we have a corker of a triple cast debut. Thursday night football for the first time this year, not just exclusive to NFL Network. It's on Fox and on Amazon Prime. Joe Buck and Troy Aikman with the call in Seattle. Rams and Seahawks. No tougher assignment in football than a night game in Seattle with the 12s in the stands. That is some really, really intense action. I've been there. I've done it. My Thursday night football life has been in Seattle quite a bit. It's brought me to Seattle quite a bit. One year, it rained so damn hard, they delayed the start of the game because the turf bubbled up. I'll never forget that. Pete Morelli was the ref that night.
Pete Morelli?
Man, I haven't heard that name in a while.
Pete Morelli was nicknamed when we were watching games with Pete Morelli. We nicknamed him Monk because he had this whole Tony Shalhoub sort of calm quality about him. Pete Morelli was the, I'll never forget him walking around out there and like tamping down the field, you know, the bubbles in the field. And Holmgren was the coach of the Seahawks that year. That's how long ago it was. And we just watched the rain cascade off the field right into our set position. I've never seen it rain that hard. And they delayed the game and it started. And Alex Smith and the 49ers had a hell of a night that night. I remember that. And then we came back, and I remember this one, that this was before Russell Wilson arrived. Forget what year it was, but Marshawn was there. And we didn't know who to invite to the set because Marshawn wasn't coming after Seattle won. He basically said he's not coming to talk. And it was me and Mooch and Marshall and Irv and Dion. It was all five of us. And we said, we'll take Pete Carroll. The network's like, Marshawn's not coming. Who else do you want? And at the time, this is before the Legion of Boom was booming. And we took Pete Carroll because the question I had for Pete was, what's the identity of your team? That's how long ago this was. This was before Russ and before the Legion started booming. And we were just wondering, you got Marshawn and who else here? Like, what's your identity of your team? Like, you don't have much of an identity on offense other than, I guess, Marshawn. And then defensively, what are you trying to establish here? I was asking those questions as, this true story, fans were hucking Skittles at us.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That was another Thursday night game in Seattle. And each time I've been there, all I would know is just like I look at the stadium and I see to myself, how is it so damn loud in here? And I think what it is that triangle end.
The design of the
covering of the roof that's over much of the stands.
Where it kinda like
right, and then curves, and then there's like some triangle type, you know,
third
level. It's just some odd construction, and it is beautiful in that city, and it is incredible, And they get ready for their football games all day long.
Oh, yeah.
And tonight will be the first night game since the 12s are allowed back in the building. And I am genuinely concerned for the Rams' ability to win this game.
Russell Wilson, Rich, 9-1 on Thursday night football in his career.
Wow.
He is damn good on these short weeks. So
he just
Pete.
Took my stat, Brockman.
Sorry, TJ.
TJ's like,
you want to say
just,
it? No,
I just texted to Brockman.
No, you can go ahead and do it.
Did you just text it to Chris and he used it?
About 20 minutes
ago.
But we're all in the same gang here.
Because he has a fantasy decision. You know, play Russ tonight or wait till Sunday and play Joe Burrow. And I'm trying to talk him out of Russ tonight. But he was like 9-1 on Thursday Night Football, and I'm like, I feel you.
I wouldn't talk you out of playing. I don't know. Burrow against the Packers just concerns me. It just does. I don't know. That's a big one, too. You see Joe, no, Joe coming out. Here I am. I'm 3-1. Come on in, Aaron Rodgers.
I really
want some of this relaxing. Here we go.
I really want to pick the Bengals this week.
The word for that would be gumption. But I am concerned for the Rams tonight, man. I'm concerned for them. And that's how incredible how these things turn so fast. And, you know, they beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Arizona Cardinals just put the bang thing on them. And now they got to go up to Seattle in this environment, short week. You know, Stafford, as you know, has one of the most wild sequences in the history of primetime football in Seattle. If you remember, it was a Monday night game when the Lions were there, and he threw one to Calvin Johnson, who fumbled the ball forward. You remember that? And the Seahawks ball in the end zone batted it out.
KJ Wright batted it out of the end zone.
And that was supposed to go back, because he batted it out of the end zone, was supposed to go back to the Lions at the spot of the fumble, and for whatever reason, it didn't happen. They were ready to. The Lions were ready to beat the Seahawks in Seattle on a Monday night, when that would have probably eliminated a lot of people from their survivor pool. In that one, I think I got that sequence right. Right? Remember, Calvin was going in, balls loose.
I do remember that.
And KJ Wright just swats it. And it was, yep, you fumbled through the end zone. It's like, no, he batted it out. Ball should have gone back to Calvin anyway, because it was in the final 2 minutes of a half.
Yeah, so that was
I remember that.
2015.
Yeah, bro.
Detroit went on a 10-play, 90-yard drive in the fourth quarter. Calvin Johnson fumbled under 2 minutes to go.
And the only one that can recover is with under 2 minutes to go, other than the defense, is the member who fumbled it. And it should have gone back to Calvin when K.J. Wright batted it out of the end zone.
So K.J. Wright knocked it out of the back of the end zone. Play was ruled a touchback, giving Seattle the ball. However, Wright should have been penalized for illegally batting it out of the end zone.
Right.
The play is not reviewable, however, so they got it incorrect. The rule, if applied correctly, would have given the Lions first and goal at the one.
Correct. I remember that. Jeez. Stafford's back in that house tonight. The drama just ratcheted up, because the NFC West, if the Rams fall to, they beat the Bucs at home to go to 3-0 and then fall to 0-2 in division within a four-day span. How huge is that? And if the Rams win this one, then Seattle falls to 2-3 behind a 4-1 team, with the Cardinals welcoming Trey Lance into their house. Now, I wouldn't sleep on Niners this weekend, too. How about this? How about this? Hold on a second. What if Rams win tonight? Totally feasible.
Totally feasible.
What if Trey Lance shows up and proves to be, to use the phrase that I referred to, Kyler Murray, is his nickname, the problem? What if he provides a problem for the 49ers? Nobody's ever seen Trey Lance play an NFL game start, okay? The game where he started. Nobody's seen it. No idea. Nobody's seen Trey Lance play a game in which he's taken snaps at the ones all week. What if Trey Lance wins that one? Not out of the realm either.
Not out of the realm.
Not out of the realm.
A little more unlikely, Rich, because what if I told you the Rams are favored tonight?
I'd believe that. I'd be surprised, but I nothing's out of the realm, is what I'm saying, in the NFC West.
Right.
If this happens, Rams win tonight, Niners win this weekend.
Okay.
The deep end of the pool, as I've described it, the NFC West,
a little deeper,
would be each game played in division. The first 2 weeks of round robin play in division would have been won by the road team.
Oh.
Arizona won in LA last week.
Yep.
Seattle won in San Francisco last week. San Francisco could win in Arizona, and then the Rams win in Seattle. It would be like, okay, so the two teams with the wins on the road last week just lost their first division games at home, and the two teams that lost their first division games at home last week just won their road division games, and everybody's now 1-1, which would make kind of make sense, wouldn't it? Makes sense. Arizona proves that they're better than everyone else. Hold home serve, even if the Rams win tonight, and they're still in first place. 2-0, and the only 2-0 team in division. How about that? That's how big this weekend is. I mean, it's what I love about the NFL, right, man? Every week is big, and every week can change your fortune right away. Or can solidify it. You know? It can totally solidify it. Ready to do my four downs this week? Ready to do my four downs?
I mean, I've been waiting all week for
you. You know,
four
I appreciate
downs.
You saying that, Chris. I don't think you really mean that. Hit. Go ahead and hit it, please.
Four downs with Rich.
Here we go. Why did you stop?
First down.
Remember last year when we were just head scratching right around midseason? How the hell did the Colts lose to Jacksonville in week one?
Oh, yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Remember we were doing that?
Oh, yeah.
It took a while for us to be like, okay, Colts are actually pretty good with Phillip Rivers, and the Jaguars are just going to keep going south right here. Even though they had one of the most talented rookie undrafted running backs we've seen in quite some time, and Minshew Mania started crapping out. Yeah. Right?
It was fun for
a while.
We're
already sitting here in week five. There are three results saying, how the hell did that happen? First one is, how the hell did the Bills lose? How the hell did the Packers get boat raced like that by a Saints team that has not shown any ability to put together quality halves
together?
Right? The inconsistency from Seattle. From the only consistent quarters that the Saints have woven together was that week one when they were the home team in a road stadium against the Packers team that looked nothing like the team we've seen since. What the hell happened in Western New York with the Bills and the Steelers came in? How did they look like that? And then what we've seen from them the rest of the way. And then the Dolphins, man. How the hell did they win that one? And I know that Tua has not played much since getting knocked out by the Bills in week two. But the Dolphins last week, that was a stunner. How poor they looked, how poorly they played.
Yeah, I got that one.
My week one head scratchers, you're already seeing there's three of them right now. And I don't know how these trends are going to be reversed. I mean, I don't know the next time the Packers are going to lose. Could be Cincinnati. Bills could lose this weekend, obviously, in Kansas City. But that Dolphins one is the biggest head scratcher. Here we go. Second down right here on the Rich Eisen show. Thank you, Mikey. You know who's turned into an elite offensive threat? An elite offensive player. Like, and I'm not just talking fantasy. Like, he is in reality.
Dak Prescott?
No, sir. You already kind of sense that he could be an elite player.
I'm just, yeah.
Cordarrelle Patterson.
Oh.
Is become an elite offensive weapon. Arthur Smith with Cordarrelle Patterson has considerably turned things around for him. He averages 4.4 yards a carry running the ball.
Yep.
Wide receiver, he's got four touchdowns. He's got four touchdowns, and he's got five plays of 20 or more yards. Only seven wide receivers have more than that than Cordarrelle Patterson. And he's averaging 24.3 yards a return, kicking the football as a returning the football as a returner. You know, Calvin Ridley's not going to London. Mike Davis, the Judah Maccabee of fantasy football last year, because his oil kept burning while filling in for Christian McCaffrey, who kept on not returning. He hasn't run the football worth a lick. Patterson's their best offensive weapon this year.
Yeah, can he play quarterback?
I don't know, because, hey, is Kyle Pitts going to finally get the ball thrown to him?
Russell Gage also out, so they're top two. If this doesn't happen this week for Kyle Pitts, I mean, isn't it?
Maybe it won't, because the Jets will be just like, we'll look for eight. But they got to look for 84 first. Yeah. This guy's pretty incredible. Here we go. Third down right here.
Third down.
You know, it's all about location, location, location. 1-3 in the AFC East is last place. 1-3 in the AFC North is last place. If you're 1-3 in the AFC West, like night. 2-2 is your last place team, and it's the Chiefs. 1-3 in the AFC South.
Still alive.
You're still alive.
Still alive.
Thanks to the Jets and the Titans having it. Just everyone take the time to look at the Titans injury report from yesterday. Awesome. It makes Bill Belichick look like he's hooked up to he's hooked up to truth serum. He's taking a lie detector test like on Meet the Parents, right? I mean, everyone's questionable. Like, it's unbelievable. Like, who's not questionable? So, who knows with the Titans this week and the Jaguars' backs against the wall? Can they win one for Urban? I'm just saying the Colts are not out of this thing in the AFC South. It makes it for a big game against the Baltimore Ravens coming up on Monday Night Football. An absolutely huge game on Monday night. And I know my last time I said don't sleep on the Vikings and they went to sleep against the Browns. I'm just saying the Colts aren't out of this thing. They got a lot of runway left.
Rich, that's 20 players on the Titans.
It's insane.
On the Titans injury report.
Bill Belichick 2.0, man.
As he goes and gets the hot take.
Fourth down.
Here we go.
All right, here we go. I've got the hot take.
Here we go.
I couldn't find the reserve, the hashtag D's nuts, to just come out in week five and say this team's making the playoffs.
What's his name
going to
hold?
I'm going to basically say that, you know, right around week 12 normally, and I'm wondering if it might be a little later this year because there's an extra regular season game, you get playoff clinching scenarios.
Right.
Who can clinch a playoff spot? And then around, you know, week 16, week 17, it gets fewer and fewer number of teams that can clinch a playoff spot. And then some of them are like, you know, you need three results, but at least they have a chance. They have got like the dumb and dumber chance. But they're in the mix. Everyone else is normally eliminated by them. Sniffing it.
Oh, sniff.
Right? I'm saying week 18, when we look down at the playoff clinching scenarios, there will be one for the Cincinnati Bengals. The Cincinnati Bengals in week 18 will have a playoff clinching scenario for real. Normally, as you know, the only time the Bengals in recent days have been a factor in the final week of the season is when Andy Dalton eliminates the Ravens and starts getting his coffers filled up by Buffalo Bills fans who are philanthropic. I just couldn't come out and say that they're going to make the playoffs. I can't do that.
That would have been... I don't know how hot that is.
You don't know how hot that is, huh?
Well, they're 3-1. They're leading their own division right now.
You even said before, like, yeah, when I said that they're the third team in the AFC North, you were like, yeah, but. So now that I'm saying
that. Well, it's because they're the Bengals. But, like, if you just look at it on paper, they're a playoff team right now. So, yeah, I would expect them to have some type of
scenario. In week 18, really, when it's all said and done. Over the next 3 months, you think the Bengals are going to continue to put together enough 3-1 months, 2-2 months, to have a shot at the playoffs in the final.
As long as Joey B doesn't get hurt. I thought you were going to say, like, the Lions are going to have one or something.
I got to believe what I'm saying. I'm not just going to say something to be stupid.
He might be crazy, but he ain't stupid, Chris.
I can't do it. I don't have it in me, Chris. I'm sorry. I know you want me to say something stupid, but I still have to have a reputation.
Just, like, not stupid per se, just, like, you know. Out there,
yeah. I think it's kind of out that the Bengals and we will not be will go into the final week of the regular season with a chance to make the playoffs. That hasn't happened in a long time, and just because they're 3-1 right now in September, I don't know. All right, you don't think it's hot?
I don't know.
Here's something I really do agree with you. I was telling Chris a couple weeks ago. I put this on Twitter about Cordero Patterson. With that guy's size and his speed, I was like, he's so confusing to me because. He's got all this talent, and it doesn't seem like any coach has ever been able to, like, really use him as the weapon that he should be. Hey, and now look at him.
We talked about the Falcons coming into this year saying Julio's gone, and then you're wondering, can Calvin Ridley step into the one? And I don't know if we've got that answer yet.
He's pretty good. I mean,
he's good. I think he can.
Well, but we also came in. I don't know. Like a number one receiver. Like, is Calvin Ridley a top 10 number one receiver? In the NFL.
I'd say if you look at the fantasy rankings heading into each week, he's in the top 10 every week.
I understand what his fantasy rankings are. I'm wondering what the reality of is it right now.
I mean, it means he's producing.
Would you take Amari Cooper over him?
Ooh.
Yeah. Would you? I mean, we could go on and on. Hopkins. Would you take Devontae Adams over him?
No, I think he's
in past years. You talk about Julio Jones as a top 10 number one wide receiver. The replacement, I don't think is right now.
He's in the second tier.
And he's unavailable now this week.
He's in tier two. He's in tier two.
All I'm saying is Ridley has not, well, it's four games in. Yeah. We're still waiting for that answer.
Sure.
The running back, we're, you know.
We have no idea.
And Kyle Pitts is like, hey, he was the first non-quarterback off the board in the draft. The offense, the Falcons offense, the Arthur Smith Falcons offense runs through Cordarrelle Patterson. That's the way it works right now. And if I'm the Jets, that's the guy you stop. Let Kyle Pitts get all his yards, certainly since I need the fantasy win in the worst way.
You and me,
all right, so I just went professional and then thoroughly non-professional. Let's take a break. Amy Trask, when we come back here, her athletic story was quite something. That's coming up next here on the Rich Eisen Show on Urban Meyer. Hey, folks, it's time for the NFL draft, which means for me, I need a good night's sleep, because if I don't have one, I'm just not myself. You know the deal. You know exactly how important it is to have quality sleep. It's a game changer for all of us. So Sleep Number helps me. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's setting is 70. We both get a great night's sleep because we could adjust the firmness of our mattress on each side. Improve your quality sleep because Sleep Number learns how you sleep thanks to their smart beds and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
844-204-RICH, number to dial for our terrestrial radio audience. Just spent the last few minutes on Peacock and Sirius XM Channel 211 setting up our next guest, who's one of my favorite people from CBS Sports. And I met her many, many, many moons ago when I first started at NFL Network. And she was spending all those years in the front office of the Raiders organization. She is Amy Trask back here on the Rich Eisen Show. How are you, Amy?
I am well. Thank you for having me. It is such a treat to join you. But let's not tell anyone how many years ago that was that we met, okay?
You know what? As soon as they came out of my mouth, I'm like, oh, man, I'm going to hear it from me. But it's true. We go way back. I mean, that's just the only way I can actually put it. And I cherish that.
And I'm just teasing you. I'm honored to have known you so many years.
I've known you so long that you were standing right next to Al Davis when he gave me grief for where the championship team from the LA Raiders landed on the top 50 all-time list Super Bowl champions. And I'm like, I had nothing to do with this.
Well, I don't know if you remember that I was giggling when he was doing that.
I was actually looking at you for a lifeline, Amy.
Sorry about that.
Guys, he came up to me at an owner's meeting, like complaining like any fan would, like, who's deciding where the LA Raiders were one of the greatest champions of all time? And I'm like, I don't do it. I'm just the host. Oh, you know. I could not help but notice your article for The Athletic and your opinion of what the Jaguars should do with Urban Meyer. I give you the floor to put it into words for this audience right now.
Well, Amy, I did have a strong position on it. And Rich, you have known me for all those years, and you know that I am not a hot take person.
Yes.
I don't have hot takes just for the purposes of having hot takes.
Mm-hmm.
But I do feel strongly about this. When you own a business, you have to make a decision as to whether those you employ, particularly someone in a leadership position, is a good leader and does exercise good judgment. And in my view, this is just another or yet another instance of Urban not exercising good judgment. There have been a number of instances before this, and it was a glaring lack of leadership. I heard you mention that Mike Lombardi shared with you that he can't recall a time in his career when a coach didn't fly home with a team. And as I shared in that Athletic piece, I can't recall an instance in which a head coach didn't fly home with us either. Now, you know, if there was an instance and I'm simply not remembering it, I am confident it was because of an emergency situation like a funeral or, you know, a loved one who was terminally ill. But I really don't remember an instance in which a head coach did not return with the team. And A, that's leadership. But B, to all the people who said to me, oh, Aim, nothing goes on the planes. No, excuse me. I was on those planes for almost 30 years, and business does go on those planes. But again, lack of leadership not to come home with the team.
Yeah, and you know, I've been on those planes too. And, you know, players sometimes go up front to talk to the coach. Sometimes the coach goes in the back. Certainly if a team's heartbroken, like Urban Meyer said in the postgame press conference Thursday in Cincinnati, that his team was, that, you know, that there is business to be done, or rallies to cry. You know, like these are things that to be done. But so the fact, though, that he stayed behind, and then the video comes out of what he was doing while staying behind, even though that wasn't, you know, we all assume, and I think correctly so, that's not the reason why he stayed behind, was what we saw on the video. But, if it was, then that would make a whole different story out of this. But let's put it together and just say, you know, what you said at the end of that column is you think that Jacksonville should just swing the axe right now and don't even wait to see happening.
I do. And as I said in that piece, do as I say, not as I do, is not leadership in my view. And I want to make very clear what I endeavored to make clear in that article and on Twitter. And I believe you and I are in accord on this. I would terminate him not for what he did when he stayed back. That's between Urban and his wife. That's between Urban and his family. I would terminate him simply for staying back, because I don't know how you lead a team when you're evidencing glaring lacks of leadership like that. Now, you know, maybe he can reconstitute himself. I do believe in second chances. But by the way, I've been given second chances in life, and I worked for a team owner who gave people second chances. But if I, and third chances and fourth chances, if I owned a business, I would have trouble now after I think this is the third time since he's been hired that I have thought, poor judgment, poor judgment, poor judgment. And as a business owner, do I want someone in a position of leadership that I think continues to exercise poor judgment? And my answer to that is no. And you are absolutely right, Rich, of course, as to what goes on team planes. Never did I see, there was never a flight home that I didn't see our coach walking throughout that plane and speaking to players, whether we were in a good mood or a bad mood, heartbroken or otherwise, meeting with players, speaking with players. Sometimes players would approach the coach. The coach would meet with trainers and the medical staff and talk about injuries. They'd start talking about the next week's game plan. But more importantly, that coach came home with his team. You know what? Let me use this term, ride or die.
Amy Trask here on the Rich Eisen Show. Well, what you just said, here's what might be the loophole in it, Amy, is the fact that, and certainly you with a legal mind as well, that to say that we're firing you, we're terminating you for cause, not the morals clause. And it was interesting to see Shad Khan use the word conduct in his statement, that we're firing you for cause because of this, that basically his response would be, well, I told the general manager I was going to do this, and he said okay, even though obviously the command and control structure of hiring somebody like Urban is you hand him the keys to everything, and he's clearly shown that being handed the keys, he can crash the car. But wouldn't he be able to say essentially, and that's the ultimate problem with this, is that there's a command and control structure where the general manager doesn't tell him that's a bad idea, Urban. You've got to take this plane back home.
Well, you're absolutely right to point that out. And I did see Urban's comment in that regard. I've not seen anything from Trent. So, you know, there's a lot to explore there. Did he say, hey, I'm staying back? And was he told, well, look, I think that's a really, really, really bad idea, but I don't have the authority to tell you not to go talk to Shad? I don't know what the response was. Was the response, okay, sure, stay back? If that's the case, you're absolutely right. There are legal issues and arguments to be made associated with that. Look, there's a dance that may go on here. If there's a termination, And I was teased today when I said termination. Someone meant, do you mean killing him or just fire him?
No, no.
Of course, I'm using the legal word for firing. But if Shad chooses to terminate him, to fire him, there's going to be an argument, an arbitration over is money owed. And maybe they can settle that on a going forward basis. Maybe Urban says, all right, you know, I'm partly responsible. Let's reach a happy medium. Let's not have an arbitration. But yes, all of this is going to unfold if, in fact, Shad decides to move on.
Amy Trask here on the Rich Eisen Show from CBS Sports, former Raiders CEO, right here on the show. And I think just to, once again, because, you know, I see a lot of responses from what I've been saying here and what others like yourself have been saying is like, you know, what did he do wrong? Right. What did he do wrong? Like, and again, it's none of your business what he was doing and so on and so forth. And as you stipulated, and I would agree, that is true. It's what it implies in terms of what everybody can do on this team and what he as an authority figure can set as parameters of their conduct and how that has now been blown to complete smithereens. Chris Long, who's been in this business for a very long time, had a perfect tweet that encapsulated the entire thing earlier this week when he tweeted out that if I'm a veteran player in Jacksonville now, I am my own boss, is what he had to say. So how does this get put back together? Can a win Sunday truly help put all of this back together based on your knowledge about that special bond between coach and locker room, Amy Trask?
Well, I'm not sure that special bond exists in the case of Jacksonville. I would posit for you that there is no special bond right now between Urban and that locker room, and I'm not suggesting that you're suggesting otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I think Chris's point is right on point. How do you get up in front of a team now if you're Urban? Let's say you're going into the bye week. How do you say to your team, I don't want you to do anything that's going to bring any shame on the club? I'm a player. I'm laughing or I'm rolling my eyes. I want you to stay out of trouble. I don't want video of you floating around the ether. I don't want to see you doing anything that embarrasses the organization. How do you have one iota of credibility? Again, I'll point to the phrase that I used in the Athletic piece. What you're saying is, do as I say, not as I do. And I don't think that's good leadership and something that, you know, you need to focus on. This is a locker room of men. You know, very different than college, where all the players are very, very young. In an NFL locker room, sure, you've got some young players right out of college. We drafted some men who weren't yet 21, but you also have men well into their 20s and their 30s, and in some instances beyond that. These are men. How do you do the do as I say, not as I do? You know, you ask about what if they win. There's a phrase, winning cures everything. I don't believe that. I've never believed that. What winning is a great deodorant.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the phrase I've always used. Winning is a great deodorant. It takes the smell away from a lot of things. But winning alone doesn't cure underlying issues. It just disguises it.
Well, and how difficult is it to win if the trust on that front has been destroyed or considerably altered, Amy? Because, I mean, again, you're mentioning the bye week, which is in 2 weeks from now there, and that's all well and good. But it's just like in the crucible of a game when adversity hits and the coach has got to make a call about whether go for it on fourth down or punt or kick or what have you, or call a timeout or manage the clock or anything, that doubt creeps in as to that person's ability. Again, he could be, you know, as terrific at that aspect of it as Urban has shown in his years of coaching. That one slip up, suddenly that doubt begins to creep into the mind's eye of a player during the action of a game. That's where I would also be concerned if I'm Shad Khan and keep a very keen eye on that sideline and the field on Sunday.
That's an interesting point you raise, and I don't know that I would look so much to players questioning an X's and O call, although mm-hmm. your point is very interesting. What I would look to is this a coach, and I'll use a euphemism, that players want to run through a wall for? In other words, I've seen coaches during my career where players are going to just do absolutely anything and everything they can to run through that proverbial wall. And I've seen instances in which it's like, yeah, not so much. So, you know, I believe football more than many other sports is a game in which emotion plays a tremendous role. It is a game in which momentum born of emotion and which creates emotion plays a tremendous role. Is that someone on the sideline for whom those players are going to say, yeah, I'm going to run through a wall for you?
Last one for you, Amy Trask, before I let you go on this Thursday. Based on your knowledge of institutional knowledge of the NFL and competition committee and the way coaches think and what you might know about what's going on in the NFL right now, who ordered the code red on celebrations with the taunting, with the taunting emphasis? Who ordered the code red?
That's a great question, because a number of coaches have spoken out in support of the rule. I'm sure there's also phone calls going around the league saying, hey, could you talk out in support of the rule? Could you give a little shout out for the rule? You know, I believe it emanated from the competition committee, but the way committees work and the league office works, the league office and committees work hand in hand. And I don't mean that in a negative way, but when you want to make a rule change or you want to put a rule up for vote, you go to the league office, then you go to a committee, then you go back to the league office, then you go back to a committee. So I'm sure a lot of people were involved in that. I love your use of the expression code red. That's great. And, you know, my issue is as follows. Do I believe that people should do things that cross a certain line?
Of course not. Right.
But there's no way you can expect a player to play with emotion. We always say we want to see our players play with emotion. Well, you know what? When you play with emotion, emotion pours through. So, you know, it was said in a Supreme Court decision of obscenity. I know it when I see it. And I think when it comes to, I think that was Justice Potter Stewart. Gosh, that was just a flashback from law school. I know it when I see it. I'll say the same thing of taunting. We know it when we see it, and let's not go too far in calling things taunting.
Yeah, no, Darren Waller was not taunting just because he spiked it on the bench. I mean, that was not a taunt, and it's so obvious it was not a taunt. And, you know, obviously I have the benefit of, you know, sitting on my couch and seeing that, and, you know, in the whole, you know, caught up in everything, a referee might just throw a flag like, but that was ridiculous. That's not a taunt. He was not taunting. He was playing with emotion. Like, what?
I said the same thing at the time. Of course, you probably said it to your audience the next day.
Yes.
I just said it to my husband. But I said, that wasn't a taunt. He didn't do it in someone's face. He didn't do it to taunt someone, to rub anything in.
Mm-hmm.
He was excited. He didn't put that ball near anyone. I agree with you.
I know. All right, Amy, thanks very much. I always appreciate catching up with you.
I always appreciate the opportunity to do so.
Well, and hi. That's how I'll say that at the end.
Hi, Rich.
Okay, we'll chat soon. That's Amy Trask. At Amy Trask, I follow her on Twitter. You should as well. I just love her everything. I love the way she talks, her brain, her knowledge, her communication skills, and she's just been there and done that, man. And
right.
I just wanted to reach out to her and... Again, like, you can't, they can't tell Urban, hey, you stuck around in Cincinnati, that's a fireable offense, when he can then say, well, I told a member of the organization, the general manager, that I was doing this weeks in advance. And that's the problem. That's why they're going to go for the morals clause if anything happens. But if they wait 2 weeks to do it and start playing football games, it'll be difficult to say morals clause too. That's the legal aspect of it right there. That's the legal aspect of it right there. But like I said, the ultimate problem might just be that there's nobody there to tell Urban Meyer that's just not the way it's done in the NFL. Either there's no command structure giving somebody that power. I mean, you can't expect Shad Khan to know everything going down at 10,000 feet, right? I mean, Jerry Jones might be the only owner that knows what's going down at 5,000 feet. I don't know. Maybe. I don't. I'm assuming that. But that's the issue, is that there's nobody in that command structure in the first 4 weeks or 4 months to basically say, can't do that, man.
Yeah, I think that's a great point.
That will not fly here.
Yeah.
The players will not sit there and go, well, Urban wants to see his grandkids. I get it.
They don't care.
Because everybody wants to see their grandkids.
Right.
Or they're, you know, not yet. But you know what I'm saying? Everybody wants to see whatever the fill in the blank version of the grandkids is.
Right. They all have stuff everybody that they want to do.
Everybody has stuff they want to do.
Right.
And so you can't do that. And if you want to do that, that's fine. Get on the plane, fly home, get some rest.
Yeah.
You might be tired,
yeah.
But that's when you call your private jet company,
PJ,
or we can
or you know, first class flies
or we,
too.
Or we could knock on PJs. Or we could knock on the door of Mr. Khan's office to see if one of Air Khan is available, the one that picked you up. You know, we can put that nice Jacksonville spotted cat carpet. Right there. We can make that arrange for you. Like what sandwiches you want on board? Like maybe we can figure that out.
Maybe the third plane that he doesn't know about, like a billion.
We could be that. Yeah, right. Yeah. Hey, Whoa, yeah. Right now, Urban might want his Swiss passport. Spoiler alert. But so, you know, that could have happened. And this whole thing could have been somewhat avoided. Now we would just talk about the video. Like, no, I went back with the players. That's a totally, that's a different way of looking the men in the eye and saying, I screwed up.
Yeah.
That's the ultimate issue. There's no command and control structure like that. But the ultimate issue is that it's needed because the keys that are being handed over just got crashed outside or inside a steakhouse in Ohio. Like the guys in the NFL who have full command of everything, do you need to tell Bill, hey, this is what you need to do on your off hours? No. Bill, you got to fly back with the team. 844-204-RICH, number to dial here on the Rich Eisen Show. Setting up our Friday show, getting out of Dodge. And there has been a maneuver made by the Green Bay Packers that is just another new wet kiss towards number 12.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Back on the show. So my latest episode of Just Getting Started, the Origin Story podcast, I've been interviewing voices of the NFL on how they got started in their career. And Aaron Andrews and Michael Strahan was last week. My first ones were Al Michaels and Joe Buck. This week is Westwood One's voice of the Super Bowl and Monday Night Football, Kevin Harlan, whose dad was involved in sports a long time, including the man who ran the Packers. I asked this question of Kevin.
You were exposed to the world of the NFL right from the get-go, with your dad being such an important part of the Packers organization and being at the forefront of the Packers organization as, in terms of the lead member of membership, as they call it, in the National Football League. What is your first football memory, Kevin?
I'll go back, Rich, even before that. My dad was with the baseball Cardinals as their media relations director during the time of the two World Series in 67 against the Red Sox and in 68 against Denny McClain and Mickey Lolich and the Detroit Tigers, Al Kaline, McAuliffe, all those Yaz with the Red Sox. But on that Cardinal team, and I used to go to spring training for 2 weeks every year that he was with the Cardinals, from 65 to 71, Bob Gibson, Lou Brock, Kurt Flood, Roger Maris, Julian Javier, Tim McCarver, Orlando Cepeda. I mean, like all these incredible baseball players at a brand new Busch Stadium in St. Louis. My dad had been with Al McGuire at Marquette as the sports information director and then went to the baseball Cardinals in 65. And so when I was a kid, we would go to church on Sunday mornings, drive after church down to Busch Stadium in St. Louis, have breakfast in the press box. And I remember distinctly walking in, here would come Jack Buck, and he would see me and my dad having breakfast in the press box. And I was like 6, 7 years old. Here came Vin Scully and Bob Prince of the Pittsburgh Pirates, like these incredible voices. And then on those Sundays when I would watch home Cardinal games from the box seats or go out the left field or sneak into the clubhouse or wherever I was, It put me like behind the curtain. I got to see press boxes and fields and practices and all kinds of things. And when Dan Devine left the University of Missouri in 1971, he took my dad with him to run the Packer front office. So I was a ball boy from 1971 into the times I got in college in Green Bay, and then during the games, I'd go to the press box and spot, work on stats, or do whatever. So I got to see everything, and it just put me so much further ahead because I knew the mechanics. I was lucky enough to be exposed to all these great writers, the way a press box operated, the way a broadcast booth moved, and that just fueled the fire even more.
Great chat with none other than Kevin Harlan, and it's filled with stories like that, including him as a 19-year-old college student at the University of Kansas who was hired to produce the Kansas City Chiefs radio pregame show, and he took his shot, sent a letter to a particular person to say, would you mind voicing the open of my show? It was John Facenda. And they're filled with stories like that.
Wow.
I mean, Kevin has a great set of pipes, too.
This podcast is filled with stories like that. Go to where all podcasts are acquired, Just Getting Started. And speaking of the Packers, man, hey, Aaron Rodgers wants help, huh? He wants some help. You need to be aggressive in helping out right now. How about beating everyone to the Jalen Smith punch? How about that one? I wonder if they asked 12, you want to call him up? You want to call him up? This is a hell of a midseason pickup. I know the Cowboys thought that he was not worth the trouble of keeping him on the roster if he wasn't going to play as a starter, and they were on the hook for his salary next year, and they didn't want to run the risk of such a good human and good enough player, but not good enough to crack the starting lineup there. So they cut him. And the Packers are like, well, we'll take him. And let's see. Let's see. He starts making some plays. I wonder if 12 called him up, said, come on over.
Probably not.
Why not? I mean, it helps. And if I was the Packers, I'd say, what do you think of Jalen, Aaron? Even if, you know, you're not running the risk of him saying, nah, forget it. That's what you got to do, man. Win now. Win for 12. I have no idea who's winning tonight. If I had to just guess, I just look at who's a better team. It's the Rams, man, and they should come out with this W, and Stafford should go into that building and come out with the win. But Russ, I would play him in fantasy tonight, sir.
I intend to.
In Seattle.
You
though.
Saw what Seattle. Kyler did against that team. You saw what Kyler did against that Rams defense.
9-1 on Thursday.
And so I would play Russ tonight, but I still think the Rams come out with the W. We shall see. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Carson Wentz, the Colts, is our first guest tomorrow. You should join us, please.